If you're shopping while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast, then you know and love the thrill of a deal. But are you getting the deal and cash back? Rakuten shoppers do. They get the brands they love, savings, and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Levi's, Plow & Hearth, Adidas, Sephora, and Neiman Marcus. Stack sales on top of cash back and feel what it's like to know you're maximizing the savings. And it's easy to use. And you get your cash back sent to you through PayPal or check. The idea is simple. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back. Download the free Rakuten app or go to Rakuten.com to start saving today. It's the most rewarding way to shop. That's Rakuten. Rakuten.com.
This show is brought to you by Safety FM.
Well, hello and welcome to another episode of Safety FM with Jay Allen. I hope everything is good and grand inside of your neck of the woods as we are hanging out on this Tuesday, December the 3rd of 2024. Yeah, we're going to talk a little bit today. We're going to do a throwback. Let's just call it what it is. We're going to go back to October the 15th of 2024, and we're going to go back in time to the event that was held by the Alliance for Central Florida Safety, also known as Safety Day. So we're going to take a moment and we're going to listen to Stephen Frost as he has a discussion about the foundation in safety leadership. Now, I'm going to tell you, this is going to be a two-parter for a Tuesday. So this will be the first part. This is when he does the speech itself in regards to what was going on and part of his presentation. And then next week on Tuesday, we're going to do a follow-up where we do the actual full-blown interview where I get to sit down with Stephen Frost and we have a discussion. So if you're ready, I'm ready. So let's go back to October the 15th as we listen to Stephen Frost discuss foundation in safety leadership here on Safety FM with Jay Allen.
So there's actually some homework that you're going to do during class. I'm not going to make you go home to do it. My name is Stephen Frost. I'm the assistant director over at the University of South Florida OSHA Training Institute Education Center. We are the OTIEC here in the state of Florida. Our office is located in Wesley Chapel, and we're your official OTIEC for the state of Florida. I've been with that organization since 2013 on and off. I've been an instructor, now I'm the assistant director, but I still teach classes because I love to share information. I have been in the safety industry for more than 30 years. We'll just leave it at that. We won't count after that. I was in the nursing services for 17 years prior to that, so I saw a lot of people coming in to the ER with boo-boos of various degrees. And figured out that we needed to prevent those injuries somehow. And that's how I got into safety. I actually made that choice. It wasn't by accident like some people. Some people get into it because they lost a finger, toe, or other thing. And, you know, that's one way to get into safety. But the reality is today we're going to talk about the foundation of safety leadership. How many of you have heard of the foundation of safety leadership? It's part of the 30-hour program for supervisors. We're not going to do the whole program because I just don't have enough time. It's a 2.5-hour training. We don't have 2.5 hours, they told me. I've got 45 minutes. I'm going to cover the basis of it. If you ever want to get into it, come to our website or go to the booth 404 and talk to us there. I'll be there the rest of this afternoon. So the Foundation for Safety Leadership was a consortium that came together and made up this program, and I'm going to run through that for you today. First, our goal. Our goal is simple. That's for you to be introduced to the five crucial safety leadership skills that you need to be able to create a safety climate that's effective. How many of you have heard the word safety climate before? Quite a few. Is it different than a safety culture? Yes. And we're going to talk about the definition of the safety climate a little bit later in this program. But it's important that you understand that there's a difference, and you do have a safety climate. It just may not be a good one. So our learning objectives today, by the end of this program, you're going to be able to explain why safety leadership's important. I think most of you probably are aware of that, but we'll talk about it a little more. You're going to be able to talk about the five skills of a safety leader. And lastly, you're going to be able to talk about how to use this back out in the field, the skills that we talk about. It's going to be a functional that you're going to take back with you and utilize this. So I want you guys to think, and this is where your paper comes in, make two columns, and at the top of the first one on your right, put inefficient. What do inefficient leaders do that you've seen in the past or maybe at some point during your career? Hopefully not today. Just write down two or three of them. Who wants to volunteer one of those?
Yelling,
yes. That's funny that he had to yell that. Yelling at employees, what else? Setting a poor example. Not making sure that they're following, you know, the rules themselves, right? I think I heard that. What about effective leaders? Let's write down some things that effective leaders do.
Listening,
yes. And we're going to talk more about listening, but that's a great one. What else?
Positive reinforcement.
Walking the walk. Coaching people instead of telling them, right? Those are all great examples, and certainly where we need to take our great safety leadership and make it better. Because if they're listening, if they're doing what they need to do, we're going to see positive results. So we've talked about safety leaders, but who are the safety leaders that we're talking about? Who's that? Employees.
Supervisors.
Managers. Everybody on our sites, right? Doesn't matter what we're doing, but it's anyone and everyone. That's the owner of the company down. It's got to be every person has to be a safety leader. We need to start teaching this to our folks from the day they get there. And we need to go backwards and teach those owners or the company executives how to do the job the right way. How many of you have ever been at a job site and had the owner or a CEO or some important person from corporate come walk through your job site and them not put on a darn thing in an area that they need it? Safety shoes? No, I've got to wear my fancy shoes. Gloves? No, I'll mess up my manicure. Something on my head. No. And then my hair gets all messy and, you know, I can't do that. But, you know, how many of it, we've all seen this. Does that set a good example for our safety climate that we're trying to do? No. It hurts us. It makes it tough for everybody. When we're talking about safety leaders, they come at different levels. Now, those at the higher level, the safety leaders that are safety professionals, managers, owners of the company, should be setting policy and precedent, right? They have to write those. But who's responsible for dealing with safety incidents? What safety leader level needs to deal with the incidents? Anybody? Supervisors, the employees, that's at that level. Everybody needs to be part of avoiding safety incidents to start with. It can't be just one person. I used to work construction a lot, and they'd put me on there, and I was the safety guy. In construction, the safety guy is responsible for everybody's safety according to their job description and according to the way they treat us. We're not responsible for anybody's safety. We're responsible for you knowing the rules. What comes to safety leaders that have to set the safety climate are those frontline supervisors, managers, those people that are actually out there in the workforce. They have to enforce the policies, procedures to create a positive safety climate. If you've got great rules, how many of you have safety rules in your facility? Almost everybody, right? You've got safety policies. You've got safety procedures. You've got ways to do it without people getting hurt. Why do people get hurt still? Because they're not following them. Why are they not following them? They're not being enforced. This is where the disconnect happens. If you have a policy and procedure and you're not actually enforcing it, you're not creating a safety climate that encourages people to do the right thing. But you have to tell them the why, not just the what. If I find that if you tell people why they need to do it, you find that people tend to do it a lot more. It's a strange combination. So safety leaders and the safety climate. You know, it's defined by how well the company's policies and procedures are being enforced. The practices, the implementation at the site itself to ensure that the employees are doing what they're supposed to. This is what creates the safety climate that's effective. Can workers tell when there's a mismatch between what management's saying and what they're having to do? Our employees are smart. Of course they can. If they hear management saying, oh, everything we do, safety's first, we have to do this, we have to make sure of it, and then when they get out to the job site, they're told to do it, get it done, not to worry about doing that. That kind of creates a quandary for them, doesn't it? Oh, everything we do is safe. Is it really? So we need to make sure that we're following that. We need to make sure that our safety climate encourages the employees to do the right thing every time. So let's talk about just something simple here. Everybody in this room should be pretty good at. What's some direct cost of having an injury on your workplace? Where's some direct cost? Lost time. Okay, what else? Huh? Medical bills. What's that? Production lost. Yeah, these are all great things. So, you know, the medical treatments are number one because that's the first one most people think of. Next are those lost wages. You know, we're either paying somebody not to do something that they're supposed to do, or we're having to pay somebody else to do something that that person's doing that maybe that's not their normal job. Because usually we have to downgrade our supervisor or manager to step down into that role to keep things moving. You know, the sick pay. are damage to equipment. When there's an injury, usually there's some kind of damage to the equipment or the production line. I worked at a facility once that was a medical / production facility. We took human bones and turned it into screws. Allograft tissue. If someone got injured during that procedure, it cost us $10,000 to turn the room over. And all of the body parts that were in the room were now contaminated and had to be disposed of. So $10,000 for a scratch that someone bled in the room. That didn't even count if they cut their finger off or did major damage to themselves. So it can be a pretty serious thing when we're talking about damage to the equipment, machinery, or materials. Then we have to worry about, you know, higher insurance premium, because the more insurance claims we have, the more it costs. Just kind of like our homeowner's insurance is about to go up again. What about the indirect cost? What are some things that are indirect?
Retraining.
Retraining, yeah. What else goes with retraining?
Overtime.
Overtime, hiring new people. How much does it cost to hire a new person these days? On average, it's about $3,000. Think about the time it takes to interview, the time it takes to sort through all those resumes, the time it takes to do the phone calls, the background checks, the drug tests, the physical checks, whatever you've got going. But it, on average, it's about $3,000. And if you don't think about the fact that it costs a lot of money to hire people, it does. You know, when HR doesn't seem to want to move forward on that, that's because it costs so much. Imagine if you've got a high turnover rate, and that's another one of those. You know, obviously, any kind of a disability, someone is on disability for a long period of time, that's going to cost you money. You may have to change their job. Somebody that, you know, has a shorter life expectancy. We'll talk more about the folks in the construction field and how it affects them in the long run. Pain and suffering. Lost productivity. Every time you've got to take somebody off the line, it costs you more money. The hiring cost, and of course, the diminished company reputation. Because if that goes public, if you have a death, think of how bad that looks. How many of you do government work? Anybody do government work? Have to do government contracts where they look at your history? If you've had too many injuries, you're not even being looked at. That is costing your company money. That's why we need good safety leadership to start with, so that we don't have to deal with that. Now, we've talked about the indirect, the direct cost. We've talked about, you know, what happens if we don't do the right thing. But let's talk about the benefits of doing the right thing, doing good safety leadership, doing your job to make sure that everybody in your company feels comfortable saying, hey, this seems dangerous. Now, how many of you have the blanket statement that says, if you don't feel comfortable doing it, stop, tell your supervisor? Does anybody have that? Quite a few shaking their heads. Okay. Most people do. But how many people actually feel comfortable to do that? That's what really matters. You know, some of the benefits are obviously increased morale. If you're not having a lot of injuries, people are happier. If your people are happier, they don't leave. Increased morale has a huge aspect on it. I don't know, anybody in here work in a really happy place where everybody in your group is happy? I see a couple of hands, not many though. You know, Having a happy workplace is important. Increased teamwork, having people actually work together to get jobs done. I'll tell you, my office, we're very tight. We work very well as a team when we're there. We have a positive safety climate because we take care of each other, and everybody knows. After the storm was a great example. First question everybody asked, they don't go, hey, how's it going? They go, did anything happen, and do you need anything? That was the question that got asked in our office. That was the question we got asked with the University of South Florida. We had a big meeting yesterday that I went to, and that was their question. Does anybody need anything? Are you okay? Because it's a stressful time. That's a big deal. That creates a positive safety climate because people know that you actually care about them. Having reduced hazards, because if everybody's reporting the hazards that they see, we don't have any left. I used to play a game with my folks. I gave them a point for every hazard they were able to write up, say, yep, I found a cord across an aisle, I picked it up. They turn that in, they get a point for that. At the end of 3 months, whoever had the highest points went out to dinner with the owner of the company. It was a smaller company. They got to sit there with their wife, the president of the company, his wife, and have a great dinner. That was such a reward for these people. I didn't realize how big that was going to be when I started it. I told the owner, I'm going, hey, you know, do you mind doing this? He's like, yeah, sure. I had thousands of points gathered up. That's thousands of hazards that were gone from the workplace. That's what we were looking for. Safer work practices, making sure that we have fewer injuries and fatalities. Better business reputation. Our reputation is everything these days. All it takes is one bad Google review. People may not come to you. Making sure that you have a productive production and higher quality. Again, if people are happy, they're doing their jobs better. If we're not messing up by injuring people, we're more likely to do the job the right way the first time. Anybody in here in construction? How many of you have time for a punch list after the job? For those that don't know what a punch list is, that's all the things that need fixing because they didn't do it right the first time. But to get the job done in time, they rush through stuff and then they come back and go, oh, we'll put that on the punch list. I'm going, why didn't you do it right the first time? Sure would save me trouble. But if the owner doesn't notice it, then it must be okay. And there are plenty of others that we could go into, but the benefits are out there and we need to make sure that we're weighing those. So safety leadership, what do you think that's defined as? Anybody? Somebody that leads by example. I heard something. What's that? Somebody that knows all the training.
A leader sets up his crew for success.
Sets up the crew for success. I love that one. That's a great definition. Now, for this course, they've defined it as a person who has the courage to demonstrate she or he values safety and by working and communicating with the team members to identify and limit hazardous situations, even in the presence of job pressures and cost. Because can safety slow down a job?
Yes.
But if it slows it down for the right reason, that's okay, as long as you plan for that. Do it right the first time and we'll save money, we'll save time. But it comes down to that. What do you guys think about the word courage?
Accurate.
Why courage? People can be intimidated. Do you think that it matters what level of safety leader you are? Changes how you're going to feel about that courage. At a management level, courage doesn't take much. We go, hey, there's a problem, let's fix it. As a safety person, we go, yeah, you know, there's a problem, let's take care of it, let's get it done. As an employee, that courage becomes necessary. Because especially new employees. A new employee walking into your site sees something that you've never seen. Nobody has ever noticed, but has walked past it 1,000 times. But on this time, the new employee says, hey, that seems really dangerous. And you go, what's that? And you look at it from their point of view and go, you know, that could be dangerous. But that takes courage for that new person or anybody at a lower level to speak up about. And that's what the courage is really about. And it does, if we have the right safety climate and we let them know up front, no, we want you to tell us anything that you see. It changes the entire scheme of things. It changes the way that they're going to affect. So let's talk about the 5 leadership skills. And I'm going to have you guys write these down because you're going to need them as we go through here. But lead by example. You guys mentioned that one. That's an important one. Engage and empower team members. Actively listen and practice 3-way communication. Develop team members through teaching, coaching, and feedback. And lastly, give recognition to our employees. We're going to go through each one of these. So, how do you lead by example? What does that really mean? What does that mean to some of you?
Walk the walk.
Walk the walk. Got to do what you say you're going to do. Got to say what they're going to do, you got to do, right? What else?
Follow the safety rules yourself.
Follow the safety rules, yeah. Practice what you preach.
Know your subject matter.
Got to know it. Well, you know what? They don't have to know it. They just have to understand it. They've got to understand the rules and actually follow them. They need to have a positive attitude about safety. So if I brought your bosses here today, and before we came in here, I had them out there in the hall and said, all right, we're going to go in and we're going to have a safety briefing. What would their attitudes be? Oh my gosh, that's totally cool. Let's go. Or, safety briefing. It's like putting a weight on them all of a sudden when you say that, right? Yeah, we got a safety class you have to attend. It gets you out of work. I'd rather work. You know, that's not a positive attitude about safety. They should be excited to learn, excited to do it, but you have to make it that way. We have to get our safety leaders, our individual employees, to want to learn about it. We need to make sure that we establish safety as a core value. How many of you have heard the term safety first? How many of you use that? Worst term you could probably ever use. Safety is a priority. Safety first. I love those. Those both kill me. When you got out of bed this morning and that alarm went off, what's your first priority of the day? Turn the alarm off or hit snooze. Either one of those. Did you look over at your phone or wherever it is, your clock, to turn that off, or did you just reach over there blindly? Or you're like me and you just tell it to hush. I use Alexa a lot for that. Normally at home, it's just like, Alexa, stop. But I don't have to reach over for that. That's why I do that, because it's safer. When you got out of bed, did you look down at the floor to make sure the animals, the toys, the other things on the floor are not there before you put your feet down? If you've got a safety value, you do. If it's safety priority, you've probably done it. Your priority is not what's below you. It's where you're going first thing when you get out of that bed. And it's not coffee yet. The older you get, the more likely it is I know where you're going. But the reality is, changing your mindset, getting a safety as a priority, is not a good thing, because priorities change moment to moment. A value is something that you get in your heart and lasts forever. You hold on to it. It's like your religion. Nobody in here changed their religion this morning, did they? Probably not, because that takes time. It takes effort to change a value. Now, can we change all of our employees' value of safety overnight? One class. No, it takes months. It takes an average of about 6 months to begin to change behavioral-based safety items. And valuing safety is one of those, because we weren't taught that as children. And we're not taught that as adult workers either. We need to set seriously high expectations for our workers at all levels, that safety is before all other things. Now, I've worked for plenty of companies that said that, and only a few of them that I truly believe enforce that. Because if safety, if you set really high expectations and hold people to it, it changes their entire day. It changes everything they do. If somebody gets hurt at work, does it affect your workplace? What if they get hurt at home? It still affects the workplace. So if we can change people's mindsets, it's a beautiful thing. We are protecting those people 24/7. One of the proudest safety moments in my entire life. I'm in Tennessee, working in Chattanooga, Tennessee, for a place that with a lot of millwrights. And I don't know if you've ever worked with millwrights. They're a difficult group. Love them to death. But they take longer to change the mindset than anything else. The guy comes in my office, shuts the door behind him, says, "Can I talk to you?" I'm thinking, well, you've already shut the door, I guess so. And he sits down and he tells me, "I was welding in my shop last night and I was grinding off the top of that weld and a piece of metal flew in and hit me in the safety glasses." I'm like, "Oh my gosh, are you okay?" He's like, "Yes, because of you. I would have never put these on without you." Constantly reminding me and telling me how important it was so that I could see my family. And that was tough. It was tough for him. It was tough for me to hear those. But it was so proud that I had changed that mindset where he did it without thinking. Then he realized how important it really was. We need to make sure that we share our safety vision with our people. As leaders, we have to share what we want everyone to do. We can't just say, "Oh yeah, everybody be safe. Have a great day." There used to be a police show that at the end of every meeting, he'd be like, "Get out there and be safe." What's that mean, be safe? My job is not always to be safe. My job is to keep me from getting hurt and keep others from getting hurt. We've got to be specific with what we're telling people, what we're really looking for, and the vision of them being able to go home at the end of every day. 14 people are still dying. For more than 10 years, I think it's 12, for more than 10 years, we have been pretty steady, just over 5,000 people dying every year, or about 14 people a day dying at work. And at least three of those that die every day are on the roadways. Road workers, usually. We need to make sure that we all, as safety leaders, walk the walk. That we don't find ourselves doing those things. We need to make sure that when we're doing it, everybody can see it. And doing it even when nobody's looking. We need to reinforce that everybody owns safety. It's not my job. I am not the keeper of every single person as the safety person. I won't take another job where they have that in the job description. You're in charge of everybody's safety. No, I'm not. I am not their supervisor. Yeah, I'd fire a lot of people if I was. So we need to make sure that they understand it's everybody owns it. We have to lead up. What's lead up mean?
Motivate
from the bottom up. We have to make sure that everybody in that company is willing to raise their voice, call out concerns, get the management, the supervisors, and others to do their job. And we have to sometimes lead from every aspect. You can't just go, well, you know, it's not my job. It is your job. So lead from the bottom to gain a safety program. I had to do that one time where I was at a company and the management did not believe in safety. They'd been doing this for 10 years in their garage. Never got hurt. Why is everybody getting hurt? I literally had to start at the bottom level and get everybody on board with safety as we went up. That was over 30 years ago. And I ran into that company recently, actually got a chance to go up there, talk to them, and have a good discussion with their new management team and find out that they are still using many of my original programs. Because they were effective then, and they're effective now. Now, they've modified a few things. They've added. They've made it better. It's not like I made a perfect program. Because you have to change it. You have to grow with the times, the equipment, the machines. So, engaging our team members, we do that by explaining how critical it is to get the job done right and safe. That safety is a part of every task. We need to make sure that we engage our team members in safety decision making. It can't just be me making up the rules. I need to get the employees all throughout all levels involved in that. Has anybody ever done Tiger Teams? Tiger Teams work really well, don't they? They get the employees involved, making the rules, updating the rules, maintaining the rules, and if you change them out so that everybody's on a Tiger Team. I worked for a major organization for a little while as a consultant, and they had Tiger Teams, and every employee was required to be on a Tiger Team at all times. But they would rotate the Tiger Teams each year. So they had 32 different things. Over the 32 years, they owned every single program there. And people stayed with this company that long. Think of that. They were the ones that wrote the safety rules. Isn't it a little hard for them to break them? If you wrote it and you agreed to it and you sent it out to the rest of the employees, suddenly you're going, I guess I gotta follow that. You know, maybe we need that for drivers. Because obviously people aren't real sure about that. We need to make sure that we're conducting morning huddles or pre-shift huddles to ensure that they're talking about what they're going to do, how they're going to do it, what's going to happen during that day. And we need the employees to be involved in that, not just somebody reading it off to them. Have them write it up. We need to empower the team members to get in there, voice their concerns, talk about the issues that they see, the hazards that they face, and to know that they can report it without any chance of retaliation. In fact, we need to reward people for when they report near misses. How many of you report near misses or give a reward for near misses? I'm a huge believer in that. The reality is, we want them to tell us. If they're not telling us, we don't know. So it's a matter of us wanting to promote a safety climate that works. Active listening. Now, I am going to be wrong here for a second. I hope you guys don't mind. There is a gender bias in active listening. And I hate to say that, but there really is. My wife tells me all the time that I obviously am a man. Because she tells me stuff and I don't remember. She swears she tells me. And sometimes I'll remember part of that conversation. So we started practicing three-way communication, and it started working a little better for us. I'm actually learning to stop and pay attention to what she's saying, not read, not type, not do other stuff. Well, that's what we need our employees to do. You know, if they're texting or getting on their computer or they're looking at another document, when you're trying to talk to them, that's not very effective, is it? We need to stop, look at the person, look them in the eye, make sure that we're paying attention to them and actually having that. We have to respect them for what they're saying. Then we have to pay attention to the nonverbal cues. This is why we need to look at them. Can you tell if somebody's happy or sad? Generally. Can you tell if somebody's nervous? Body language is everything. What's coming out here can be entirely different than here. You know, if I came up here and I was like this, you guys would be, oh, this is going to be fun. But just by standing up straight and a little bit of movements, it changes everything. That's body language. And we do react to it, sometimes without even realizing it. Or, you know, have you ever been talking to that person and they're off looking up in space most of the time? Because they can't look you in the eye as they're telling you something? Because maybe they're afraid that they're telling you something that you don't want to hear? Or they're making it up. We need to listen to hear what's being said versus coming up with a response. This is something my wife says I used to do. I was notorious for it. She'd be telling me something and I would be coming up with an answer to it. I'm ready to respond with whatever it is that needs to be done. I'm like, oh, you know what you need to do? Never a good way to start a conversation with my wife, by the way. She was just telling me. She didn't actually want my input at that point, but I didn't know that for a really long time. But I figured it out finally. Like I said, we started practicing three-way communication. Ask clarifying questions if you don't understand. And this is a hard one because if somebody's telling you something and you don't understand it, you have to ask for those clarifying those comments. So you want me to do what? Great example is, you know, sir, will you get me a sandwich, please? What kind of sandwich? That's a proper question. That's a clarifying question. And then what if I need a drink and chips and other things? We need to make sure that when we're asking for things, we're giving all the information up front to be clear. Because just go get me a sandwich doesn't mean much. Actively listening is just part of it. The three-way communication. Anybody here at your workplace practice three-way communication on a regular basis? Only one person in this room. I worked for TVA for a little while, Tennessee Valley Authority. They actually have a requirement on their job sites to practice three-way communication. If you get caught not practicing three-way communication, you have two choices. Leave or leave. They're serious about it. They want to make sure that you are practicing three-way communication on every task that you do. And we need to make sure that you've got the listener's attention, that I've got you. So it'd be like, Sean, and I'd want to see you looking at me. You're looking back and forth. And as we're having the conversation, I can read what you're doing. You can read what I'm doing. And then be direct and concise. For some of us, being concise is a little bit hard. And sometimes direct comes across what?
Harsh.
A little harsh. But if you always practice it and get into a rhythm with it, you'll find that it's very easy. Even, like I said, my wife and I have started doing three-way communication on key things. So you're direct. You go, I need you to go to the store, pick up bread, milk, eggs, and sugar. Now, what did I tell you is her part of that? And I go, you said to pick up bread and sugar. She's like, that's part of it. Was there something else? And I said, yeah, I can't remember. Was it chocolate? She's like, no. So we practice that, and she coaches me to know what she needed. And she said, well, maybe you need to write that down. Okay, I'll write it down. Then I always forget the note. But we are working on it. I didn't say we were perfect at it. We need to clarify any misunderstandings, make sure that our communication is good. We need to then do our teaching and coaching. What's the difference between teaching and coaching? Teaching is learning, in a short version. What's coaching?
Practicing
and watching them practice. So it's watching. Then we have feedback. Feedback is a very important thing. How many of you get feedback at work? How many of you get feedback every week? Quite a few. I'm impressed. How many of you get feedback only once a year? How effective is feedback once a year? No, it's terrible. You know, when my children were young, I gave them feedback pretty immediately. So we can use a FIST method, and we have to describe the facts, make sure it's factual, that we've got all the facts, that we have an impact. What impact is it going to cause with them doing it that way? Then provide suggestions. Remember, you got to work together to make sure that you're on together, and get them to try to come up with the answer, even if you know it. That helps them learn by having them come up with the answer. And it has to be timely. And by timely, I mean as soon after as possible without causing an incident and stopping them. That if you wait 6 months to tell somebody that they did something wrong, they've been practicing the wrong thing for 6 months and they didn't know it was wrong. So we have to recognize our team members, and that's making sure that we give recognition separate from other things. Don't be talking to them about the job and then go, oh yeah, and by the way, you guys are doing a great job out there. And when you do recognize somebody, give them praise in private. So pull somebody aside, say, you know, you're doing a really great job at whatever. And be specific. Don't just give the good old boy, you're doing great. Make sure that you're specific about it. And then give the praise publicly if they approve. Why wouldn't we want to give praise to in front of everybody? What might that cause in a workplace? Jealousy. Yeah, it can make a target on their back. It can be a bad thing. And they may not want that. Some people are all about it, but not everybody. So the Foundations of Safety Leadership has these little scenarios that you can go through, and it starts with cover up, and that's the easiest one, showing three-way communication all the way down to Fritz's shortcut, and each one of those gets more in depth to the five safety leadership skills that you need. Like I said, this program was put together. This is a short version of it. You can get this online if you type in Foundations for Safety Leadership. I will tell you, it's a huge program when you download the scenarios, because it has little videos. It's got a lot of stuff with it. It's got little handbooks and all these things, but it's very valuable for you to download. These are the folks that created this. I wish I could take any credit for that. The biggest one is the CPWR. They were kind of in charge of putting this together, and we do want to thank them for all of their work. Can I ask, are there any questions? Did everybody have a good time?
Yeah.
All right. Thank you very much. I appreciate your time today. I hope that each of you will take this home and practice it. Remember, it is also marriage counseling as well as safety counseling. Thank you. Have a great day.
The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are those of the host and its guest and do not necessarily reflect the official policy or position of the company. Examples of analysis discussed within this podcast are only examples. They should not be utilized in the real world as the only solution available, as they are based only on very limited and dated open source information. Assumptions made within this analysis are not reflective of the position of the company. No part of this podcast may be reproduced, stored in a retrieval system, or transmitted in any form or by any means, mechanical, electronic, recording, or otherwise, without prior written permission of the creator of the podcast, Jay Allen.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.